Dick, we're really happy to have our next guest here. You know, we've been, it's been a whole year since we've had a wonderful bluegrass player in the studio like this.
Yeah, since the last bluegrass session.
Exactly.
A year ago.
Yeah, and this, of course, is Jim Van Cleve. He's the featured bluegrass musician this weekend at the Bluegrass Masters Weekend down at Lutzen Resort. Jim is one of the founding members of Mountain Heart. He's a fiddler. He's been nominated for a solo Grammy. And then, of course, Mountain Heart with Mountain Heart. I believe they've had a number of awards. He also was a Grammy winner for some of his studio performances.
He's got this unbelievable career of recording and performing with people we all know very well, you know, from Johnny Cash to Ricky Skaggs to Doc Watson to Carrie Underwood, you know.
So, and here he is in our
it's
studio.
It's pretty cool, and he's sitting here right across
over here.
Welcome,
blushing.
Jim.
Yeah, there.
Over here blushing. Thanks, guys. Thank you so much.
Yeah, he's got a great accent, too, doesn't he?
Yeah, I've been told that. I was going to say, you guys sound like you kind of have an accent.
Yeah.
and it's not Lutzen, I found out just now. It's Lutzen.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Lutzen kind of sounded clunky anyway, so yeah, that's good.
That's probably Lutzen. The German pronunciation is Lutzen.
Lutzen, I think, you're closer to the correct one, but
well, there,
no,
see,
it's clearly Lutzen.
For us, it's right. Lutzen, yeah.
It's been grandfathered in now. That's awesome.
Yeah, so welcome to the North Shore. And,
thank you.
Where are you from originally, Jim?
Originally, Florida, actually. Sarasota, Florida. I was born there, and my family moved away from there when I was 8. And summer, I was 8 years old, we moved to Western North Carolina. And, you know, there's a lot of opportunity for acoustic music, you know, there it's just ingrained in the culture. It wasn't so much in Florida, but my family was already pretty involved with it, just big, you know, music lovers, I guess. Not terribly musically inclined, I wouldn't say, but there was a lot of love for music, and I was exposed to a lot of good stuff early, which is fortunate, you know. And luckily my mom and dad had great taste in music, so I got to hear a lot of good stuff early. And when we moved to North Carolina, I was about 11. And for whatever reason, I had played just a tiny bit of violin when I was like 6. And, you know, as most 6-year-olds are, I have one now, so I can see how this happens. I lost interest in it. You know, I kind of put it aside. And for whatever reason, I was about 11, maybe 12 years old even. And, you know, I just took an interest to it again. And I guess maybe the groundwork had been laid when I was young, but I just caught fire for music. And, you know, I loved it, and it was a way to express myself, I guess. And, you know, looking back, I have to say God probably had a big hand in, you know, he knew what I was supposed to be doing before I was aware of it, way before I was aware of it. So thankful for that, you know. But, you know, I even tried to not play music at times. I thought I was supposed to run off to college, as all the good boys do, and do that whole thing. And lo and behold, I realized I was actually college was just like something, a place to stay in between jam sessions and recording sessions and stuff like that. So
yeah,
I stopped fooling myself.
That's a real blessing to have, to be able to identify so clearly what you should be doing.
You just hit the nail on the head. I didn't realize that until I was in my mid-20s, and I'd already been playing professionally for, you know, 5 or 6 years.
Uh-huh.
And I had friends who were still, you know, pulling their hair out, trying to figure out what they wanted to be when they grew up. And I was like, huh. I guess in my ignorance, I kind of took that part for granted. But now I see, you know, looking back, I'm like, man, I'm so thankful that for whatever reason, I was touched on the forehead, you know.
So you've been a professional musician. I'm trying to get it close to his age here, Buck. For how long?
I'd say probably 18 years.
Wow.
I turned 35 earlier this, well, I guess last month now. Mm-hmm. And I started playing professionally when I was about 16.
Yeah, you've accomplished a great deal for such a young man.
Thank you.
Compared to Buck and I, anyway.
Yeah, I haven't accomplished anything, and no. I'm an old guy.
Too late, I think.
You're too modest. You're too modest.
You know,
you learned how to run that console over there, and that's more than either of us could say.
So that's yet to be seen.
You're doing good. Well, at least you know your way to the studio. I drove 17 hours and passed this place by a mile. There's a kind gentleman. I don't know if he's listening right now, but I pulled through his driveway and interrupted his evening asking if he was a radio station.
Yeah.
He was. And in fact, he was not.
He's made the – it's a common mistake here. He went to 1712 East. Highway 61.
Beautiful home. He has a beautiful home right there on the lake, and I stayed and chatted with him for just a minute and almost didn't make this interview, but but here we are.
Yeah. Here we are at West Highway 61.
Yeah. Anyways, I was doing the college thing. I was about 19 years old, and Doyle Lawson called, and he's a very well-known, prolific, I guess famous would be a word you would even use. I don't generally put the word famous and bluegrass artists, you know, together, but he was a very renowned professional national touring act, and he called when I was about 18 or 19 years old and started to pursue me being in the band, and I turned it down a couple of times because I felt like I was supposed to be in college, you know. And then my grandfather passed, and just had a moment of clarity on the way back from that funeral. Once again, most likely God reaching into the car and telling me what I was supposed to be doing with my life. And I realized I was fooling myself when I, you know, pulled up after having been up all night. I pulled up in front of my dorm and parked where they always tow your car away and just left the car there and went inside and went straight to an exam I had not studied for. And I was like, yep, this is a joke. So I need to go ahead and jump on a tour bus. And I've been doing that ever since. Now I spend most of my time either in the studio or driving to Minnesota.
How did you happen to put together so many talented people with Mountain Heart? You know, I think about, well, how do you put a band together right away that's that good?
Well, I have to say the initial push for that, I was young enough to where I wasn't really involved in that. I didn't have the networking, you know, in place yet. But the other two guys that were founders of the band were Barry Abernathy and Steve Gulley at the time, and they had already been around the horn, you know, a few years older than me. I think Barry was 30 at the time, and he knew all the promoters and knew all the other bands and the players in those bands. And Adam Steffi was also going to be an original member of the band. So those three guys were kind of the nucleus, and they asked if I was interested in it, and I was, because I was a big fan of Adam's, and I wanted to play in a band with him would just be, you know, a dream. So I jumped on board real early, was one of the early adopters, I guess you might say, and then shortly thereafter, we needed a bass player, and I knew a guy from Western North Carolina who was great and just a great guy, easy to be around and travel, and you know, that's just as important as anything. So his name was Johnny Dowdle, and we hired him, and it was off to the races, really. Barry had laid a lot of the groundwork for, you know, bookings and labels and, you know, finding songs and all kinds of stuff. So he already had a lot of the early brain trust kind of work out of the way. So, you know, early on it was that. And then, you know, as all bands do, it changed and morphed and people left and people came. But we, you know, I think as I developed as a musician, a lot of my ideas started coming to the forefront of our sound. And I was aware of, you know, who the really great young players were that were coming up. And we've always tried to, you know, push the envelope to whatever degree we can. Sometimes more or less tastefully, but you know, just varying degrees of taste, I guess, or good sense. But we've always tried to make music that matters, you know, play things that we're passionate about. So that's kind of been the central core principle of our whole thing has been, you know, if it's something we're passionate about, then we're going to try it, you know. And that passion, you have to go find the best of the best to be able to, you know, carry out some of the music that we were attempting, because it was fairly challenging. You know, a lot of this stuff was fairly hard to play. So you got to go seek out guys who can really bring it. And we've been fortunate enough for most of those to join the band down through the years. Yeah,
that's great.
It's been a lot of fun.
You know, I thought maybe we'd listen to one of your songs now. Maybe sure. You could talk a little bit about that first one we're going to listen to.
Yeah, this is actually off my solo project I did in 2007, I believe it came out. And I had already done, I guess, 4 or 5 Mountain Heart records at that point, and it was probably 26, I think, or so when I did this album. And I'd kind of been watching. We'd worked with Ricky Skaggs through 2 or 3 projects, and I was working with a guy named Mark Bright, who's Carrie Underwood's producer, and you know, countless others, Rascal Flatts, and you know, he's a very knowledgeable and well-respected guy, and he had done the previous Mountain Heart record. So I was just really having my eyes open to a whole new world of possibilities in the studio. I met an engineer named David Hall, who's now one of my best friends, and he was a big part of, he jumped in the boat with me, and we went off to work on this record, and it was a labor of love and a big passion for me to, you know, I had kind of a vision years before what I wanted it to be, and I was finally able to capture that. You know, I kept waiting, trying to wait until the right team was put together, and I knew enough to be able to actually steer the ship to the, you know, to the port. So we jumped in and did this record, and the song that we're getting ready to play got a Grammy nomination shortly thereafter. So
isn't that great?
It was just, yeah, it was such a great thing. I had my daughter, my first child, and then within just about 2 weeks, we had a Grammy nomination come through.
Wow.
So it was a busy, busy November that year.
I guess.
It's
that's
crazy.
Wonderful.
Incredible. Yeah.
What
yeah.
was that year?
I'm thinking it was 2007.
Okay.
Yeah, it seems like 100 years ago, but it really wasn't.
Yep.
It's crazy.
Well, we're going to be listening now to Jim Van Cleave and one of his first big hits. So the name of this song is Nature of the Beast.
Thank you.
Jim Van Cleave from his CD No Apologies, and it was Nature of the Beast, Dick.
It was. It lives up exactly to the description here of the intense energy and dazzling
sure.
musicianship that
thank you
is described here. So yeah, that was beautiful, Jim.
Thank you very much.
Yeah,
appreciate it.
There is a lot of energy involved in playing that kind of music, isn't there?
There definitely is. Yeah, it's. I do a lot of country sessions in Nashville, and generally those are infinitely easier to just, you know, get through than what you just heard.
Oh, really?
Oh yeah, tons. I wish it was all as easy as some of that stuff, you know.
Now, is that a song that you wrote yourself?
Yeah, that is. That was, I don't know, that was probably a year or so in the making. Most of my songs end up being, you know, at least a year in process, and I'll forget about them, and I'll find a work tape, and I'm like, oh yeah, that was cool. That was a neat idea, and then I'll kind of work on them a little bit more, and then eventually get them recorded. Takes a while sometimes, but it's because I'm busy.
Yeah, you are busy. You know, I was reading a little about you on the web, and I was really surprised to hear about the disease you contracted this summer.
Yeah.
Because I just associate it with something that happens far away and nobody really ever gets it, but you did.
I did, yeah. Dengue fever is what you're talking about, and I've been corrected on the pronunciation of that too, so you have to forgive me if anybody's had it, but if they got it, they didn't get it here. It's a tropical mosquito-borne disease, and it's really reached an epidemic level this year, they said. The CDC has reported more cases this year than in a long time, apparently. But I was down in St. Croix in March playing, and I've got a gig that I've played down there a few times now. Myself and Josh Schilling, our lead singer from Mountain Heart, and Seth Taylor, our guitar player, we went down as a trio, and we're playing on the beach, basically, at this resort down there. And really terrible gig to have to suffer through, I got to be honest, you know, just sitting there on the beach in the Caribbean playing as the sun goes down. It was really terrible. But it actually did take a turn for the worse. I flew home on a Tuesday, and was home for a few days and felt fine. But on Sunday following, I started just really feeling terrible. And by the following Tuesday, just a couple of days later, I you know, it was really bad. And I got out of bed that morning, and I walked in. My wife was getting ready for work, and she said, "Have you seen your face?" And I looked in the mirror, and it was like bright red. And I was like, "Wow, you're right, it is red, isn't it?" She said, "Have you looked under your shirt?" And I was like, "No." And I was wearing a red shirt, but I lifted up my shirt, and it was literally the same color as my.
Oh.
I was from head to toe. I had this just. I turned red, and I had no idea what that was. Obviously, we were freaking out because I think meningitis or something like that has some of these symptoms that were kind of, you know, I'd had a really high fever. And it was a real ironic kind of thing. I had never heard of dengue fever before until the day we were flying home from the island. The resort owner's daughter had a milder case of it, and she had to miss our show, and she was a singer, and we were talking about that, and she was talking about dengue fever, and our chaperone who brought us down there, he was like, "Ooh, that's terrible." You know, he told me just a little bit about it. And it was the kind of conversation you typically would, you know, forget, you know. Mm. But when I got really sick, I remembered it. And I couldn't remember the name of the disease exactly, but I could kind of get close to it. So, you start typing things into your phone and it predicts what you're, you know, it actually came back with what it, you know, dengue fever. And I was like, "That's it. That's the one." So I clicked on it and I started reading it, and it was exact. The list of symptoms was exact. And if you look at, you know, if you read them, it sounds bad, but it doesn't sound like completely and utterly terrifying necessarily if you just read the symptoms, unless it turns into dengue hemorrhagic fever. And, you know, as all people do, I just assumed, that won't happen. And, you know, when my fever got up to like 106 point whatever, and it kept coming up and down, and I didn't move from the couch for several days. You know, it was looking pretty grim, but I didn't realize how bad it was until I got to the hospital. And, on Friday, my doctor had called and he'd run some blood, and he said, "You need to go. Your white blood cells have been compromised and you're in worse shape than a lot of my chemo patients."
Wow.
And, so he said, "If your kids come home with a mild cold, it could kill you at this point. So you need to go to the hospital immediately." So we loaded up and went, and when I got there and they got me hooked up, at that point I was starting to get dizzy and, couldn't stand up and things like that. And my kidneys were shutting down and my liver was failing, and all my readings, you know, the numbers were just ridiculous. And I was dying and didn't know it. And they didn't tell us this. They were really cool about it, but I basically had about a 50-50 chance of making it or not. And, you know, God willing, we came through it. But later we found out how dire it actually was. They didn't tell us going into it, so they didn't want us panicking, I guess, you know. But we didn't know how bad it was until later, and then it got really scary, you know. And I was 8 weeks, 9 weeks maybe getting back, just getting back on the road. I mean, I was just totally decimated. It was a really rough stretch, but it's hard to talk about some of it because I didn't take it as seriously as I probably should have early. And then afterwards, I was kind of in a state of shock. I was like disbelief almost.
Right.
And,
well, it's amazing, self-diagnosis of something like that. I mean, if you hadn't had that conversation with that young woman,
I might have died, really, because I would have thought, man, I've got the flu. And, you know, they said it was probably 12 to 24 hours if I hadn't gone to the hospital. That would have been all she wrote, you know. So, and I was planning on not going, you know, how we are. you want to lay on the couch, you know. It's like, I feel bad. I don't need to. I'll be okay. And really, everything I'd read on the web, you know, the CDC and whatever else there is, you know, WebMD or whatever, it looked like, you know, more often than not, I was kind of at the spot where I should get better. And I actually started feeling better one morning, but it was because my body quit fighting it. And I didn't know that either, but I just quit fighting it. So it was a nosedive.
That's an amazing story.
Scary stuff.
You haven't been back on your feet that long. This just happened August, September. And
It was March when it happened. Early March, but it was almost June before I got back, March, April, no, it was almost May before I really got back to working. And then it still took me another 6 weeks once I did start working just to be able to feel normal on stage. And I had a lot of lingering, like short-term memory issues, like really bad for a while. And it's, my wife would tell me, she would say it's probably still not so good, and she's right. But, you know, I definitely noticed some like cognitive little pieces of just trash laying around like dust bunnies in my brain, you might say. But that was apparently a you know, common symptom later as your systemic, you know, you've been decimated pretty much. As you're coming back up to speed, you'll have moments of unclarity. And
but you're clear now because you're going to be teaching.
I'm clear enough to teach fiddle, at least. Clear enough to talk about bluegrass, right? Yeah. I wouldn't want to solve for pie necessarily.
we're speaking with Jim Van Cleve, and Jim is going to be, he's the featured musician down at the Blues Masters Weekend down at Lutzen Resort this weekend. And Jim, there's another tune I'd really like to listen to, and that's was a big hit for you as well. Maybe you could talk briefly about it. We'll get her.
It's called Let the Big Dog Eat, and it's just a bluegrass rip 'em up barn burner is the rip snort kind of tune. Really, really fast and just a lot of fun. Doesn't say anything too awfully heavy, but you don't have time to in a song like that. So but it was a number one for me, and it stayed up there for 3 months, actually, so that was pretty cool as a fiddle player to be able to say that.
That's great. Here's Jim Van Cleve.
I rode the silver rail, working as a brakeman on the line in Ohio and Kentucky. I saw the black smoke roll, wishing you were sitting by my side. Roll the coal to a job, let the big dog eat. We're rolling South Georgia like a silver streak. Hear the rumble of the rail, see the black smoke roll. I'm going back to Dixie, just rest my soul. Calling me, it's home, Sarah Queen's round, music on the rail. There's no place that I'd rather be. Throw the coal to her jaw and let the big dog eat. We're rolling South Georgia like a silver streak. Hear the rumble of the rail, see the black smoke flow. I'm going back to Dixie, just to rest my soul. Big doggy, we're rolling South Georgia sewer streak. Hear the rumble of the rail, see the black smoke roll. I'm going back to Dixie just to rest my soul. I'm going back to Dixie just to rest my soul.
And that was Jim Van Cleave with his great tune. That was Let the Big Dog Eat.
Yeah.
And that was, as you said, a number one hit for you.
Yeah. Yeah,
a long time, too, set up there.
3 months running. It was pretty incredible.
Kind of unheard of.
Well, yeah, especially for, you know, a solo artist, you know, in a side project. That was, it was really cool. You know, most of the time you're, you know, the band, Mountain Heart, would have that. Luxury, or I don't know what the word would be, but that honor. Mm-hmm. And when I did, I was just kind of floored. You know, it's really, really a neat thing. Really cool.
Well, we're really happy to have you up here on the North Shore in Cook County and at the Blues Masters this weekend.
And then there's a concert in the evening, right?
Tomorrow
correct,
night.
Correct. After a full day of workshops and all of that, we can stand. We're going to drink a pot of coffee, and then we're all going to come back, and we've got 2-hour-long sets, and I forget what time they actually start, but...
I think it's 8.
Is okay, 8 o'clock,
right?
That sounds good.
8 p.m., yeah.
You give us time for dinner then, so yeah, we'll crank up about 8 o'clock, and we'll play a couple hours back-to-back, and we don't know what we're going to play yet, so if anybody's got requests, now's your chance. You can run on down there, and we'll act like we know it.
Boy, that sounds fabulous.
It's going to be a blast. Yeah. We're excited. We really are.
It's going to be one more pretty soon as he gets back to Lucy.
Yeah. Right. I'm going to race on back.
Jim Van Cleave, he's a great guy. It's been great to have you in the studio,
I appreciate
Jim.
Y'all having me. Thank you.